And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus on this Monday, March 24th, 2025. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, along with our Ag Director, Bridget Riedel. And we had a little taste of winter over the weekend, Bridget. I know you saw a little more snow up in your neck of the woods than we saw here in the FM area.
I don't know what you guys were doing over the weekend. I wasn't expecting to come home to this, but here we are. And it's March. It's fairly normal.
And that's what, you know, everybody seems surprised. We see snow in April, for crying out loud. We're not even in April yet. So
it's still there.
Yeah, we still have another month to go. And yeah, it's feeling a little more like March should today, with temperatures outside right now in the 20s over the snow-packed areas to our north, where they picked up anywhere between 4 to 8 inches of snow. Grand Forks, Crookston, Reynolds, Fertile all picked up more than 4 inches of snow. We picked up just over an inch, 1.1 here in the FM area. Grand Forks set a record at 4.7 inches was a record for the date. So the moisture, much needed, that's for sure. So we're not going to complain about that. And we do have some more moisture in the forecast as we head throughout this week. For today, though, a lot of sun for the rest of the afternoon. 30s over the snowpack, low to mid-40s elsewhere with light winds. You'll notice those high clouds moving in from the west. And then tonight, we'll thicken up those clouds, mid-upper 20s. And Tuesday, I could see a sprinkle or a light shower as we head into the afternoon. But again, it's really not going to add up to much. But if you wash your car today, I can almost guarantee you we'll get at least a light shower tomorrow. That's typically how it works. And then we'll dry things out Wednesday and Thursday and warm it up. Upper 40s on Wednesday, upper 50s on Thursday. And then we're eyeing a storm system for Friday, Saturday. It's going to start out as rain on Friday, but it could bring us some measurable snow again as we head into the weekend. So something we'll keep an eye on during the week. Our models are still kind of all over the place in terms of how much snow. Does this system stay to our south and we really don't get much at all? Does it hit us directly? A bunch of different solutions on that. But the good news is it looks like we're going to get some much-needed precip out of this Friday and Saturday. So that's good news there for our farmers.
Yeah, and actually, it's that time of the year. So I can already see snow melting in lots of places, but that's really not a big surprise. We'll see what things do to start to warm up. People are starting to feel a little bit more like spring. Especially if you've been south, you really feel like you've started to see nicer weather, and
yeah,
you're just waiting for it to happen here, and it will.
And speaking of, we've got a pair of tickets to give away for the rodeo, and I believe that's this coming weekend. It is on Saturday. So if you want a pair of tickets to the rodeo for this weekend, I've got some trivia for you. And it's a dual answer. You can answer either one. So today, it's going to come close to 100 degrees in Phoenix. Now, I'll give you, you can answer either one. What's the earliest 100 degree temperature for Phoenix, or what's the earliest temperature, what's the earliest 100 degree temperature for Fargo?
So you said the earliest 100 degree temperature we've had.
Yeah. What's the earliest date we've had 100 degrees here in Fargo? Or what's the earliest 100 degree temperature for Phoenix, since they're about to reach that today?
So we're waiting for the right answer. It's not even about numbered caller. It's the right answer that that person has to have, right?
That's right. Yeah. So either one. You can either answer what's the earliest 100 in Phoenix, or what's the earliest 100 degree temperature here in Fargo? 701-293-9000.
That is the JLA Insurance phone line for this show. And speaking of shows, etc., the rodeo again this weekend, Friday, Saturday. This is PRCA at the Fargo Dome. And actually, on Friday morning, I will be helping host the coffee club with Janae White. And we're going to be talking about, we'll be up at the dome talking to folks that are involved with the event, and kind of looking forward to that.
Yeah. So is it Friday and Saturday?
Yeah, I believe that it is Friday and Saturday.
Okay,
Janae and I will be doing the show on Friday.
Okay, the tickets I have are for Saturday. Addison, can you take that? I've got to hold on here. Okay. You got it? All right, Addison's got that. So again, the trivia question was, what's the earliest 100-degree temperature? I can hear the Google searching going on already.
Likely so.
What's the earliest 100 for Phoenix, or what's the earliest 100-degree temperature for Fargo? And is that right? So we have Daryl on line one. Daryl, what's your answer for a pair of rodeo tickets for Saturday?
I think it's either April 2nd or 7th, probably April 6th, 1976.
No, that's not correct, Daryl. That's not correct. You're in the right month. You're in the right month, but not quite that early.
So the right month, do I get to repeat what he said so we know we have the right month?
Yes, he said, well, I'm guessing he was talking about Fargo.
Yes.
And he said April 6th, isn't
it? Yeah. Yep. 1976, we even had a date or a year.
Yeah, not correct, but good try there, Daryl. Again, what's the earliest 100-degree temperature we've seen here in Fargo? Or what's the earliest 100 that they've seen in Phoenix? And the reason I bring up Phoenix is they're supposed to hit 100 today, and would that be a record if they hit 100 today for the earliest 100?
Very possible.
Yeah, so 701-293-9000 for a pair of rodeo tickets for Saturday's show at the Fargo Dome. All right, hello, caller. Can I get your first name, please?
Jackie,
what is your guess for the earliest 100 either in Fargo or in Phoenix?
In Fargo, April 4th, 1976.
No, Jackie, sorry. No. That is not right. I'm sorry. You got the right month. All right, caller on line two. Can I get your first name, please?
Yeah, I'm Todd, T-O-D-D.
Todd, hey, what's your guess? Either earliest 100 in Fargo, earliest 100 in Phoenix?
Let's say Fargo.
Okay. And what's your guess?
June 30th, 1883.
No. Good guess, though.
For Google.
Google. Google was wrong. No, it's earlier than that.
Try Google again.
You guys, I skip Google. Somebody called Daryl Richeson, state climatologist. That's the guy who would know.
When I saw Daryl pop up here on the screen, I thought, this isn't fair if this is Daryl Richeson.
I think it's fair. That's a guy who didn't have to look it up.
He probably wouldn't have to Google it. Yes. So, yeah, what's the earliest 100-degree temperature either here in Fargo or in Phoenix? Hello, caller. Can I get your first name?
Mark.
Mark, what's your guess?
April 21st.
Ding, 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 ding. All right. We have a winner. Do you know the year, Mark?
1980.
You're right. Okay, would you Google it?
He's that good.
Let's see. He's that good. Yeah, right. Okay, Mark, we're going to put you on hold here and... our director, Addison, will get some information for you. The tickets are for Saturday, and you can pick them up here at the you know where our station's at, right next to Thunder Road there?
Yep.
Okay, good deal. Well, Mark, hang on. Addison will get more info from you, and then those tickets will be waiting at our front desk.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. All right. So, yeah, April. Did he say he did find that on Google or no?
He did. He did find it.
And it's interesting because the other caller thought it was June 30th he found that on Google.
I think it depends on exactly what you typed in, too.
Right.
What did it say as you got started there?
Yeah, and Bridget and I were talking about this, that 70% of the years since 1900, 70% of our summers, we don't even have 100-degree temperature.
Well, I'm not exactly all that surprised. You know, there's days where, or summers where we'll have long stretches of days that are in their 90s.
Right.
And we'll think that takes forever. And remember when the humidity is up and we're all laying around in a pool of human, sweat?
Right.
That's not pleasant either.
No.
But we don't have that many over 100.
It's not a dry 100 like it is in the
God.
Desert.
Yeah.
It's a humid 100.
It's a humid 100.
That's no fun.
Really? Tell that to my deodorant, whether it's a humid 100 or what it is. It doesn't care.
Oh, man. Well, we've got an interesting guest coming up here.
We do. We're going to talk to Mark Krohn. Mark has done a cross-country trek on a tractor on behalf of FFA. And we have lots of questions for Mark as to how he got started and why and where. And we're going to do that when we get an opportunity to catch up with him here after a little bit. I do also want to remind folks, if you haven't been watching on Sundays on our Facebook page, WDAY Weather and Ag in Focus, I've been posting books that are agriculturally related because I do get this request from time to time. Where can I read more? Maybe you want to add something to your summer reading list. And so there's a number of them for you to go and check out, and you can scroll back through the weeks to see which ones you may have missed. So some are authors that we've had on air with us, such as Brian Reisinger with Land Rich, Cash Poor, about dairy farming, particularly in Wisconsin, and the changes from small dairies to larger and just the overall ag industry switching to a larger market. Also, there's a book on there from a female veterinarian out in Virginia. Her book is titled Driving Home Naked and Other Veterinarian Stories.
What?
Yeah. Things weren't going well trying to deliver a calf and or sewing in a uterus after a prolapse happens on a cow. And she said it was pretty messy. It was just easier to get rid of her coveralls than to try to drive home in that. We also have books by Lee Clancher, Snoopy and the Spy, talking about the what we know as the 2+2 tractor from International Harvester. That was the long front nose articulating tractor and some of the stories that go with that. Tractor Wars, which was written by Neil Dahlstrom. He happens to be the archivist for John Deere. And even folks that are very local, Bruce Govig, who we've had on a couple times, and he is a wealth of knowledge about entrepreneurs in the region and particularly those related to agriculture. And last but not least, a fan favorite, Max Armstrong. I do highlight some of Max's books as well. He's sent me a couple copies and there's great stories. One of the favorites that I have is he talked about having to drive on Easter Sunday near Cavalier, North Dakota in a blinding blizzard. And he thought that was the day he was going to have to be resurrected because he thought it was pretty terrible out there. So for those books and more, again, you can find them on our Weather and Ag Facebook page. And take a look at any of those that might interest you. But we want to catch up with the markets. Jesse Allen will be here from the American Ag Network. And then after that, we'll be back with our guest, Mark.
Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. And we are awaiting on our guest. He had some internet connection problems. Right, so
we're going to get that to work out smoothly. Right. And once we do, hopefully we get a chance to visit with Mark. And again, that's Mark Cohn. And we are talking to him about his FFA AgriCruise across the states. So we'll have lots of questions for him because he did it by tractor. It reminds me a little bit of the tractor trek that would happen in the 80s. There was a number of those like that went to Washington, D.C. as protests and so forth. But I don't think Mark was protesting. I think he was doing very good things. So it seems like that'll work out just fine.
Oh, man. Well, you want to hit on some ag topics real here?
I certainly real quick can.
While we're waiting for Mark?
Yeah, we're going to get Mark connected by phone. I think that'll probably be our most stable connection for him. So one of the things that I found, I don't know if I should say this is interesting or slightly horrifying, but there is a company called Brown Foods, and they have unveiled Unreal Milk, the first lab-made whole cow milk. It says that the milk matches the taste, texture, and nutrition of conventional cow's milk, and it can be transformed into butter, cheese, ice cream, and other dairy products. It is made by cultivating mammary cells from cows in a lab. The cells are grown in conditions that cause them to produce milk. It should replicate nutrition and traditional dairy. So because it's not precise fermentation, they would have to scale this up using bioreactor systems to produce mass volumes of milk for human consumption. So this lends itself to the whole situation that's been going on for folks where they are trying to grow meat in a lab and it's not. A lot of folks are going to say that's not quite right. I mean, right. You don't want me to eat processed food, so I'm supposed to give up my Pringles, but you want me to eat meat or milk that was literally grown in a lab? I'm not sure I can do that.
Interesting. Now, when is this going to become? Is this just
testing? Yeah, they're in the startup phases of it, so they haven't gotten it done yet. I don't know. I have some concerns that how do you label it? Because, you know, the other thing I hear from consumers is I want to have truth in labeling. How do you label that?
Processed fake milk? I mean, I don't know. But wow, that's interesting. It would be interesting to see how it tastes. And like you said, does it have the same nutritional value that regular milk would? I would just think it just wouldn't taste the same.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I don't know that it would work as the way people want this to. I just have trouble with it. I am very much a traditionalist in the fact that I want to eat ingredients that came from, you know, their starting origins were plant, animal, etc. I'm not sure that I'm quite ready for a test tube food. But yet, you know what? I grew up on high C and TV dinners. So really, what am I arguing
right,
for?
Exactly. Right?
You know, anytime I hear folks my age that say, well, you know, we have to eat better. We should have healthier food. Do you all recall our childhoods?
Oh, man.
If it came in a box or a can...
We ate it. Yeah.
And with glee. You know, I remember the first time my mom brought home Capri Suns and my sister just thought those were the greatest thing on earth. I'm sure it was just You know, we could make fun of it now with that meme that it's essentially diabetes in a bag.
Right.
But we thought it was
cool. And don't forget bologna.
Cool.
You know, we had the bologna sandwiches and all that. It's all so good.
Oh, you say that like I gave it up. Hey, Hawaii loves Spam. Right? So
we
can all have our thing.
Right.
So yes, I realize I'm speaking out of both sides of my mouth there that I might say that unreal milk would be weird and awful. But yet we know for a fact that folks are doing things like that and it's, they're happy with it. So I still think that we have a lot of truth in labeling that has to come forward, especially when you talk about the almond beverages and that type of thing. Where did it really come from? So we'll find that out.
All right. Well, we've got Mark on the line. Mark, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
You're welcome. It's great to be with the WDAY folks.
Thank you. We're so glad to have you. And so, Mark, where are you calling from today? Folks are curious who you are.
Okay, my name is Mark Kane, K-O-E-H-N. I kind of claim dual citizenship. I'm in central Minnesota. I live halfway between the little town of Upsala and the little town of Holdingford.
Oh, yeah. I know where Holdingford is. All right.
Yep. If you drive down I-94, I'm about 15 miles north of either Avon or Albany.
So. Okay. Yep. No, very closely to where you're at. So, Mark, have you always had a lifelong connection to FFA? How did you kind of get rolling with this FFA Agri-Cruise?
Okay. Yes, I was involved in FFA all through my high school years, which was 50 plus years ago. I'm going to be turning 70 this year, so I've been around the block a few times. the school, I'm an alumni of the Upsala, Minnesota schools. A couple years before I hit ninth grade, the school had dropped the ag program for about 4 years, and the community rallied the school board to resurrect it, and I had a wonderful first-time ag teacher by the name of Dellen Pepley from North Central North Dakota, from the Rolla area, I believe. He has passed away. He was a wonderful, wonderful mentor to me. I'm the oldest of three children from a small central Minnesota dairy farm.
Okay.
And I was incredibly shy and bashful and sheltered. And through FFA, we learned things like parliamentary procedure, ag economics, and I was involved in general livestock. And right now, you can't put enough quarters in me because I don't shut up no matter what. So.
Jeez. You know, Mark, you said that your advisor was a Pepley from up by the Rolla, North Dakota area. That must have run in the family because either a brother or a son would be Wes Pepley, who taught ag in North Dakota for a lot of years as well.
It'd be, yep.
Okay. So I knew Wes. All right, we're all going to get to know Mark here much more in just a few minutes. We will touch on our bottom of the hour news, and then Mark Kane is going to continue his discussion. I can't wait to talk about 1,900 miles on a tractor, and which one, by the way. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. We get the opportunity to have a chance to continue our conversation today with Mark Kane. And Mark is down in the Upsala, Minnesota area, for those who might not know where that's at, but it's not far from Avon, Minnesota. And Mark has the unique distinction of having made a tractor trek, and he did 1,900 miles from the seat of his tractor. So, Mark, why did you want to get started doing this, by the way? What was the decision to say, I'm just going to hop on this tractor and drive to the Gulf of America now? Ooh, caught it.
Well, Bridget, the inspiration came almost 15 years ago. I read a newspaper article about a gentleman that drove an old two-cylinder John Deere from Oklahoma to North Carolina for an Army reunion.
Uh-huh.
And wouldn't that be fun to drive a tractor from Minnesota to the Gulf of Mexico? And as I started talking about it, I talked about a lot of things. And one night, my wife and I were having supper, and she was sitting across the table from me, and I was discussing this, and she looked at me, and she said, good God, you're going to do this, aren't you? and that's about the same time that our FFA chapter in Upsala organized an FFA alumni and supporters chapter. I was one of the charter members, and as I got involved in that, I thought, well, why not marry these two together to take a bucket list thing that I wanted to do and put a better cause to it than raising awareness and funds for FFA alumni. So that's how it happened.
Excellent. Okay, so you've decided to do this. You needed a tractor, or did you already have one? Because folks, you are welcome to call with questions for Mark. You can reach us on the JLA phone line, 701-293-9000. But we better answer it. People want to know what tractor it was and if you had it, Mark, or if you had to get it ready.
Sort of. like I said, this trip took a long time, and about 7-8 years ago, my elderly parents next door had a farm retirement auction through Steffes, and he had a whole bunch of farm all tractors. We were rent farmers for the most part, and I bought his 1940 farm all M with the thought of restoring it and taking it on this trip. It needed a lot of work. The school next door to us here in Holdingford, their ag department has a wonderful ag mechanics program where they restore 5 or 6 old tractors every year. So I took it in, and all that it cost me was the parts, and they totally rebuilt the tractor and repainted it. It looked nicer than it did when it came off the showroom. So that's how the tractor got access. So
I got to tell you, a 1940 Farmall M, mind you, doesn't come with a lot of amenities. Now, I can see a picture of it, and so can viewers who are watching on our live streams on Facebook, YouTube, and Acres TV under WDAY's Weather and Ag in Focus. And that tractor, you've got a sunshade, but what other things did you need to do to get ready for this type of a trek?
Well, it needed new tires all the way around. I built a canopy on it, and I put a windshield on it, which I'm really glad I did to take the wind burn off my face. Yeah, it's got 5 gears. This was a straight M. 5 gears, no gas gauge. I had a little wooden dowel that I would open up and stick down in the tank every so often to see how low of fuel I was. I added a box on the front to hold the generator for the camper I was pulling. Mm-hmm. So it took me most of the summer to get this stuff finagled to the point that I thought of working about. One of the concerns was how much fuel it was going to take, because without a fuel gauge, you kind of got to know where you're at.
Right.
So about 2 weeks before I went on the trip, I took a 50-mile out and 50-mile back round trip to kind of make sure everything worked okay.
Uh-huh.
And from that, I was able to determine I could easily make between 100 and 120 miles a day on a 22-gallon tank of fuel. So
that's a lot of days on a tractor.
That's got to be an interesting adventure, Mark. Now, from the start to the finish, what's the biggest obstacle you ran across?
I got up every morning and called into our local radio station, KASM in Albany, mm-hmm. to speak with our farm director, Joe Gill, who's the past president of the Farm Broadcasters. You're probably familiar with him.
Yep, I do know who that is.
Yep, and the biggest concern was, of course, safety. I had flashers and blinkers and all that kind of stuff on the camper. But the most difficult thing was finding a place to park, because I left every morning about 7:30, and if the weather was nice, I drove until like 7 o'clock at night.
Uh-huh.
And I'd pull into a town. Most of the businesses were closed, and I really didn't want to park in somebody's place without permission.
Sure.
So I ended up staying in some church parking lots. I ended up staying at a few implement dealers. Ended up staying at a few private residences. So it was a couple times I stayed in a mobile home park, campground. And so that was probably the biggest challenge, was finding a place to park at night. I just needed a flat spot. I had my own generator, my own water. But that was probably the biggest challenge, but it all worked out just fine. Sometimes there were so many FFA supporters that I would talk to along the way, and multiple times they would call ahead to a community and give me 3 or 4 options of places to park. So that really, really was appreciated.
That's huge.
Yeah, I had hoped for, you know, safe travels, decent weather. The only rain we had was the first day we left the Canadian-Minnesota border north of Lancaster.
Uh-huh.
And that night they had 3.5 inches of rain, so a kind gentleman let me park in his yard.
I bet.
And he did a newspaper interview that night while it was raining with the editor from the Thief River Falls paper. And the next morning I'm heading down Highway, 53, going to Thief River.
Sure.
And I got about maybe hour and a half into the drive, and I was hoping for some good interaction with people along the way, but I wasn't quite sure. So I'm driving along Highway 53, and I see an elderly lady in a mobility scooter parked on the end of her driveway. And I thought, okay, she's getting the mail or, you know, whatever.
Sure.
And I get up, I get about 100 feet away, and she starts frantically waving a white dish towel. and my first thought was, good Lord, she's in trouble.
Right.
So I put the tractor in neutral, jumped over the fender and ran over, and I said, are you okay? And she said, heavens, yes, I've been waiting for you for 20 minutes. And it turns out her daughter was following us on Facebook, and she knew I'd be coming down that road. And her late husband, this lady was like 88 years old. Her late husband had a farm OM, so we shared stories about driving a farm OM. And she was telling me that right after they got married, she was helping bale hay with a square baler. She was driving the tractor, and her husband was on the wagon stacking, and he made some motions where she was supposed to turn and go, and she got kind of confused, and she snapped off three fence posts. So lots of stories. And then we talked about children and grandchildren, and she had great-grandchildren. And after about 10 minutes, all of a sudden, she pounded her fist on the dash, on the handlebars of this mobility scooter, and she said, young man, and I'm 70 years old, I don't get that very often. She said, you have a long ways to go. She said, you get back on and you drive. And she said, I want to let you know that I'll be praying for you, and my daughter's going to call me every night and let me know how it's going.
That's fantastic.
And it gets a little better. She reached in the glove box, and she handed me an old bread bag with a twisty on it. She said, I baked some cookies for you. So I gave her a hug, and I jumped on the tractor and waved goodbye. And about a mile down the road, it's about 9:30 in the morning, and I thought, you know, a cookie would taste pretty good. So I opened up the bread bag, and there were two big homemade molasses cookies, just like my late mom used to make, and a $10 bill. And I don't mind telling you, I had tears in my eyes for a couple of miles because of that kindness of this elderly lady.
That is wow. Oh, the stories that you can amass from doing a tractor trek like this, Mark, are phenomenal. And okay, I just want to clarify for people, you started in Lancaster, Minnesota. I'm going to ask, if you did you have to haul the tractor to Lancaster to get started, or did you drive to Lancaster?
No. One of our alumni members had a military buddy connection up near Lancaster, and this buddy, he had passed away, but his son was in contact with the border guard, so we called up there, and they said, yeah, just pull into the duty-free station, and you can unload and take off from there. So that's what he did. So this buddy loaded it up on his fifth-wheel trailer and hauled the tractor and the camper up there for us, which was about 300 miles.
Yeah. So, okay, you get going from Lancaster, you're heading south, you're on your way to the Gulf of America. How long did it take you to get there on driving 1,900 miles?
21 days.
I am fascinated by that. I thought it would take you much longer.
Yeah, 21 days of actual driving. I did take a little bit of a detour when I, on my way through here, I drove probably an extra 100 miles to stop at home. I needed to change oil on the tractor and do some laundry and service a bunch of things. And also, my wife and I went out for my 69th birthday, so we took a couple days off. And then after that, I got back on, and it was pretty much nonstop all the way down to the Gulf of America. And I anticipated a fair amount of support the closer to home I got, and that was indeed the case, but I was flabbergasted by the amount of people that followed on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
We had about 4,000 people following on Facebook and talking with media people. They said you can pretty much double that for people that'll look at it but don't click on follow.
Right. Yep.
And so we went down, and all the way down, I had a big sign on the back of the camper, and I had signs on each side of the tractor, FFA AgriCruise, that was the name of our ride. And people would stop and take pictures of me, FFA supporters, that the word just got out.
Uh-huh.
And there wasn't one single day all the way down where I didn't have four or five people stopping and talk to me and taking pictures of the tractor and myself. And they would buy me lunch. Many times they filled up with gas for me.
Oh, that's great.
They helped me find a place to stay. It exceeded my my expectations by 1,000%, the kindness that I received all the way down there. It was just incredible. About 20% of the people, the attraction was the old farm OM, because just about everybody grew up driving one of those. And the other ones, it was a connection to FFA. One day in Oklahoma, about 10 o'clock in the morning, I had a car pull up beside me, and they tapped the horn, and I could see the elderly lady taking pictures of me as I drove by. and they pulled off into approach about a half mile up ahead, and it was safe to do that, so I pulled off and chatted with them. They had driven for 60 miles that morning to find me to take a picture and chat with me and cheer me on. That's stuff like that was just incredible.
Wow. Mark, we have an emailer asking a couple of questions here. He said, was he able to raise money for FFA? If so, how much? And how did he get his tractor back after he reached the Gulf?
Two very good questions. Yes, we had a Venmo account. I'll back up a little bit. Without the help of our local FFA alumni committee, the chapter, they helped me out so tremendously with setting up the Venmo account, because I didn't want to be handling money mm-hmm. while I'm driving here. And about a third of the money came in through a Venmo account. The rest was old-fashioned snail mail. One of the first things that I struggled with was finding a name. I had a full page of names written down that I thought would work pretty good, and it just wasn't clicking. And at our very first meeting, a couple of our younger members said, well, why don't we use AI? And having grown up on a dairy farm, my first question to them was, why are we calling the artificial inseminator to come up with a name?
As soon as you said that, I thought of a bull.
Yeah. And they said artificial intelligence. And in about 3 minutes, they had about a dozen names picked out from using AI, and we settled on FFA AgriCruise across the states. And that's Lola we did. We ended up raising, we had hoped to raise a lot more money. I was hoping to raise $100,000, but it turns out that large corporate entities, you know, Case IH, John Deere, Pioneer, all the big players are already making annual contributions to FFA or FFA alumni.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't want to do any more, which I respect. And I didn't want to take anything away from contributions that were already earmarked for FFA. So we ended up raising roughly $7,000. And the breakdown was 50% of it is going to stay in our local FFA alumni chapter for equipment repairs. 25% is going to go to the state FFA Alumni Federation, and 25% to the national. So that's what we ended up with. And what was the other question about the tractor?
How did you get it back after you reached the Gulf?
Oh, okay. We got down there, and I had intended to sell the camper down there because my wife and I are not camping people.
Oh, okay. Yep.
And haul the tractor back. So when I got down to the Gulf area, I started calling around, and about the cheapest offer I could find was about $2,500 to haul the tractor back.
Mm-hmm.
And the tractor was only worth about $4,500. It's like, oh man, that's not very good.
Right.
And I met some wonderful people in the town of Winnie, Texas, and that's about 15 miles from the Gulf of Mexico. And so I was chatting with them. They're both extension educators. And his wife, Nikki, has a very robust Facebook page, Farm Life, Farm Life. So we were talking with them about it, and they convinced me to be in the Rice Festival Parade. They had just finished the rice harvest a couple of days before. So I agreed to that, and then the next morning when we're lining up for the parade, he said, would you consider selling the tractor? And I'm like, wow, I hadn't thought about that. It was my late father's tractor. He did not buy it new, but it was in our family for 40-plus years.
Sure.
It's the tractor that my siblings, my wife, my children all learned how to drive on.
Uh-huh.
And he said, I'd like to buy it from you, and we're going to put it in the Winnie, Texas Agricultural Museum. And I thought, you know, that's a pretty good home for the tractor instead of sitting out under the tree someplace. So I talked with my brother and a sister. I talked with them about it, and they said Dad would be pretty proud to know that his old tractor is in a museum. So, and we actually were down there last week on a little bit of a vacation. We stopped by and got to see the old M. So that was kind of cool. So, and every time she uses it, it's only going to get used 5 or 6 times a year for FFA hay rides and that type of stuff.
Oh yeah.
And every time she does, it's going to be posted on her Facebook page. So I'll get to see my tractor every time it gets used. So that was a pretty good deal. And the camper I was unable to sell. They were just giving me really low offers on it. And I had to get back home anyway, so I rented a U-Haul and hooked its camper to the U-Haul, and I drove the thing home. So the camper is going to go on the market here next week when it's I'll pull it out of the shed and clean it up and we'll try and sell that. So the tractor ended up staying down there in Winnie, Texas, which is about 15 miles from the Gulf.
Mark, this has been so much fun to visit with you. You have an incredible story. I would strongly recommend that folks go find your journey on Facebook. They can still follow along. And correct me if I'm wrong, it's under FFA AgriCruise, correct?
That is correct. Yeah, the whole journey was on there. I posted every night what happened during that day. And then I posted the towns that I was probably going to go through the following day. And that's why I had so many people lined up on the side of the road to wait for me and cheer me on as I went by. It was an incredible, incredible experience, one that I'll never forget, one of the top three or four things I've ever done in my life. Plus, it raised awareness for FFA alumni and supporters because, unfortunately, across the country, only about 35-40% of FFA chapters have an alumni group to support them. So I spent a lot of time and energy expounding on that, and I have at least three or four places I stopped at where I'm pretty confident that after I went through, they actually started an alumni chapter. Aww. So that makes the trip worthwhile.
Thank you so much, Mark. Those are great opportunities for others to follow up on as well. Like you said, starting their alumni chapter and more. And we need to do a quick break and come back with the weather. But thank you to Mark Kane. He just spent that time filling us in on his FFA AgriCruise. Folks, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. Oh, we're about done. If you have any tech support needs, you be sure to call Chris over at Tech Support Farm. It's been a busy day.
It's been a crazy day for a Monday, right?
Well, and we're out. So yeah, better hold for Jay Thomas next.
Yeah, Jay Thomas coming up next. Don't go anywhere.